This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tis the season for festive football, and the best way to watch it? Down at your local Green King Sports Pub, of course. After all, Christmas is a time to catch up with friends old and new, so get the team to your local for refreshing pints, delicious food and live action of every Christmas cracker. Every fixture from TNT, Sky and Amazon is live at Green King Sport. That means wall-to-wall action on their huge HD screens. Head to your local Green King and watch every winning goal, top bins volley and dodgy VAR decisions in an atmosphere worth sharing. Download the Green King Sport app and you'll receive 10% off drinks every single time there's sport on the telly.
You're listening to the West Ham Way podcast with Dave and X. Oi, oi!
Hello and welcome to the West Ham Way podcast with myself, Dave Walker, an ex-WHU employee. Today we reflect on an undefeated week for West Ham, but one that is still leaving a number of fans feeling deflated with the performances. We talk about Moyes ball against Palace, scraping through in Serbia, the consistent level of quality from Kudus, the way we start a second half, and the two away games we have this week before getting news from X and answering questions from Patreons of the West Ham Way. X, another undefeated week to talk about, but there isn't many happy hammers around. Can you understand why?
Yeah, I can. I mean, the level of performance in both games this week was poor. Both games were very boring. You can't get away from that. I mean, I'm sitting there at both of them, and, you know, bearing in mind I was tuning in from bloody Lapland to watch the game on the first day, so I could have been doing a lot more exciting things. It really wasn't good either game. I mean, we were probably a slight in a better team yesterday, but the problem is just that it is boring football, and you know, I've defended David Moyes, but yesterday, like, it's hard to defend at times. At the end of the day, we didn't lose. Like you say, we're undefeated, so if you look at the facts, it's not that bad. But when you've got to sit through some of those games, and you know, I'm checking my phone constantly because I'm so bored. You do think you pay money for this, because yes, you want your team to win 100%, and for me at the moment, that is the ultimate thing. But you also want some entertainment, and you know, you're struggling to get that from games at the moment, apart from the goals.
Yeah, it's very true. And look, I've always said that football isn't a sport. It's a love, it's a passion, and a tribalism that comes with it. Ultimately, you just want the results because your team has picked up the points. At the same time, factually, it is a sport. And from sport, you want entertainment. And that's the problem. And, you know, you can suffer the odd game, but we're starting to see a bit too much of a pattern now, because I think yesterday was classic Moyes ball again, when it's slow, uninspiring, boring, negative, predictable. And given the fact that Palace have lost to Luton and were also without some key players, surely it's an opportunity missed.
Yeah, I expect us to get 3 points, to be fair. We should have got 3 points. Let's be honest, Mavropanos makes that mistake, which was terrible. That cost us a goal. There's a couple of chances we should have probably done better with as well. So, you know, we should have won that game, and we didn't. And, yeah, you can only look at it negatively. I mean, you can try and make excuses. The excuses would be that we played on Thursday, obviously out in Serbia, come back, it's only a two-day turnaround, and Crystal Palace didn't have a game in the week, so their players are arguably fresher. You could argue that, you know, Kudos and Alvarez particularly were very ill during the week, hence why they missed the game on Thursday. They're playing with a virus that had gone through the squad. Zuma, the captain, dropped out last minute due to family issues. So, you know, there's little things you can put together to make a case, but the grand scheme of things, the performance is uninspiring. And, you know, when you look at say a father taking their child to the first game to watch West Ham, you know, I'm starting to think I want to take my son who's turning 5 in a week's time. I'm thinking, right, that's about the right age to start taking. That's when I took my eldest daughter, so I'm thinking about it. But at the moment, I know if I take him to those games that we are currently watching, he's going to be bored within 10 minutes, so I've really got to time it right. And I'll tell you, there's a couple of other factors to go into more detail, but I don't want to just keep talking. But one of them, I do think Sunday games at 2 o'clock don't help either. Like, I know other teams like play at those times, but for some reason I always find the atmosphere, and it's not just now under Moyes, it's under other managers. I remember thinking Boxing Day games, bar the odd one or two, you know, like when we won 5-0 one Boxing Day, but majority of the games were boring. Whenever we played Millwall, because of the potential violence aspect, they were always 12 o'clock games, they were always boring. So I don't think being on Sunday at 2 o'clock helps, because the atmosphere was dead as anything yesterday. And of course that's a factor with how the teams play, you can't get away from that. But the atmosphere, I could hear the players talking, you know, that's, and I'm like, and I'm row 17, mate, you know, and I can hear the player, I could hear their conversations. And certainly after the second half, again, we've conceded an early goal, there's no one there, so the atmosphere's dead. So there are factors, but ultimately the buck stops with the manager, and you have players there that should be entertaining to watch, and at the moment it isn't. So,
So you could literally hear the players yawning, could you?
Yeah, pretty much. And say, what the fuck are we doing here? Like, you know, it was a bit like that. Like, you know, I don't want to get too negative. Everyone knows, and believe me, I know. People know, because every time West Ham play badly or the performance is a bit boring, I get tagged into about 10, 15, 20 messages. I don't know why. People feel the urge to bring me into it every time West Ham don't play well. Yes, I've backed Moyes, and I still at the moment factually back him because of the results, but the performances and the entertainment is very hard to stick up for at the moment.
Well, one beacon of light was Mohamed Kudus, another excellent performance from him. One of his many qualities that he brings to West Ham is that he's versatile. So with that in mind, would you play him in his so-called best position, which is right wing, and keep Jared up front? Or would you keep him central, put Jared on the right, and look to bring in a striker next month?
I think we've definitely got to sign a forward, 100%. I think we're massively lacking a forward. I'm going to put the case forward for Solanke again. Scored a goal at the weekend, which I thought was a great goal in the box. Don't know if he's seen it. Just took the ball, turned on it, hit it in the corner. His stats show he works the hardest. He runs the channels. He's strong. He scores goals. He's played for top teams. You know, he's the one I would want. 100% we need to sign a forward. But for me, the biggest tactical problem we've got at the moment is Lucas Paquetá, because he's playing out on the left wing, kind of. He's not a left winger. He always drifts inside. At the moment, you can take a bit of skill, some real tricks, if it comes off and produces something. But at the moment, his goals and his assists aren't happening. You know, when you've got a flair player, you want goals and assists. Yes, he's got some this season, and yes, he did that great assist for Emerson, where Emerson perhaps could have done better. You know, so he has moments, but for me, out on the left wing, he's wasted. He's not a direct winger. He gets down the flank, beats people and puts crosses in, and at the moment, he's too luxury. You even need to bring him into the centre, which is going to give you a dilemma, because Kudos likes to play in the centre. And then you've also got Soucek and Ward-Prowse and Alvarez. So you would bring him into the centre and drop one of them, or you sell him in January. And I hate saying that, because he's obviously a world-class player that I love watching, but at the moment, he's the biggest tactical problem we've got, and a lack of an out-and-out forward.
Yeah, and he is underperforming at the moment. And you can say, is it because he's being played out of position? And I think if you're Maxwell Cornet, you've got to ask some questions to David Moyes for a start.
Yeah, definitely.
But no, I think you're right. I don't think it's a coincidence that these underperformances have come from basically playing him out on the left wing. And I've got some frustrations with Lucas in general at the moment. You know, I think he's too casual on the ball, especially when he's doing it in his own box. He gives the ball away too much, generally speaking, anyway. And now what we've seen in his game is he's throwing himself on the floor. I mean, yesterday,
yes,
fucking hell, it was embarrassing. I mean, at one point, he pretended to be knocked out.
I know, it was ridiculous.
What are you doing?
And mate, that was the other side of the pitch to me. So, I mean, the Billy Bond stand, and that was like right in front of the dugouts, and I said to my dad, I said, what is he doing? He's just faking that. He's got to stop doing that. It's disgusting. Faking head injuries. You know, head injuries are so serious. You can't fake them. Morally, you shouldn't do it, but he's doing it all the time. And, you know, I don't want to dig one player out, but and it's not necessarily his fault because Moyes keeps playing him in a position that's not his natural position, but it's definitely, for me, something has got to be sorted out of him. As you said, too many tricks, too casual, and this play acting is getting stupid now. The problem you've got, and I do believe the three central midfielders, is what's got to be fixed, because you've got Ward-Prowse playing too deep at the moment. You know, Souček, I can't understand what I think of Souček at the moment, because he's scoring goals and he's doing really well. He's without Souček, God, we'd be in a much worse position, because he's getting last minute goals. He won a lot of defensive headers yesterday, which probably wouldn't have got noticed, but he did in the penalty box. He's so useful either end. But outside of that, he does almost next to nothing. And it's so hard to know whether you could maybe drop Souček and bring him on for the last 15 minutes, 20 minutes. You know, because he almost scored yesterday. If Bowen hadn't have got that header in, they would have fallen to Souček and he probably would have scored. So maybe bring him on, or could you drop Alvarez at the moment and put Souček as a defensive midfielder? I think you've got to explore getting Paquetá and making him either go centrally or maybe put him on the bench. But then you've got the whole ego issue, and so it's a real difficult one. I wouldn't drop Paquetá because I think he's good, a good player, like a world-class player when he's performing, but that for me is the main position. And you alluded to it earlier, Cornet, what has he done to not be selected as an ITK? I can't tell you, I don't know. And he did a brilliant assist for Souček in Europe, so you'd think he's on a bit of a buzz, bit of a momentum, get him on, but he didn't.
Yeah, and instead, on the 88th minute, I think it was, a Pablo Fornals comes on, who, you know, is probably going to be leaving the club. And he's in his mind, he might already have checked out. I don't know. And as much as we love Pablo, I never really feel that he's going to come on and be a game changer. Whereas you've got someone there, and for the exact right reasons you've mentioned, the first bit of confidence he might have in him now after a good performance when he played for us previously, you've got Maxwell Cornet, blistering pace. You know, he's a natural winger. He will attack. He will run at them. He will give the defence trouble, especially when the defence are quite leggy that late on in the game. For me, it's another question mark. I don't know why he's not being used. I really don't. I would feel so frustrated if I'm Maxwell. What has he got to do? You know?
Exactly, mate. I mean, he must be questioning why he's joined the club, because he's barely played. You know, obviously he had an injury for a large part, but he's barely played. And obviously got the African Nations coming up. I'm not sure whether he'll go, because he's been kind of in and out of their side a little bit recently. But I think, yeah, he's got to be frustrated, because like you say, Fornals hasn't performed recently. I mean, in fairness to Fornals, I actually thought he did all right when he came on in the brief time he had.
But, is he a match winner in the 88th minute? I don't know, and I
would have rather brought on Cornet as well, and I would have brought him on a lot earlier. You know, you're chasing a game against Crystal Palace, well, not chasing a game, you're chasing a winner against Crystal Palace. Cornet would have been the person for me to come on that left wing, and I would have also potentially thought about bringing on, you know, Mbabane, so they've got someone to put it at as well, and maybe putting Bowen on the wing, or and moving Kudos to the centre or something. But I don't think Bowen, again, hard to judge because he was playing up front, played that well, but again, he's back from injury, so, you know, the manager has to make these big calls. And the problem we've got is the likes of Bowen, Paquetá, you know, Alvarez, I'm guessing, Kudos, they're all big name players they expect to play, but they can't all play at the same time, particularly when they're not performing. So you've got to make the big calls and taking them off when necessary. And I was surprised at the lateness of subs in that game, and Yeah, it's frustrating. I mean, you know, the performances are not good at the moment. But that said, I don't know why, and maybe it's me, the ever optimist, but I think we'll play well on Thursday, and I think we might get a result against Spurs, believe it or not, and then things feel different again.
Oh, I hope so, because I am worried about Thursday. I really am. They're in good form, and I don't know, it's just the way we're playing. I know our style of play and our counter-attacking philosophy works better against, you know, top four, top six clubs, and we're away from home, and that's the one time you probably should play the way we play. So, of course, there's always hope. But I am a bit worried about that, I've got to be honest. And I just want to sort of elaborate on a part of the conversation we just had there in terms of what you do with the team selection, because we've always said it's a nice problem to have selection crisis in terms of having too many players. And I think that still stands. But at the same time, has it also given us a bit of a headache? Because, you know, in an ideal world, right, and I've just scribbled something down here, if you kept a flat back four, which would be, you know, Emerson, Zuma, Agüero, Chufal. You could, in theory, put Alvarez as a defensive midfielder in front of those. And you've got so much quality, ability and explosiveness in Kudos and outstanding quality in Paqueta. They can be the two players centrally that have that free license to go wherever they want. That is your central attacking force. And then you've got those two working alongside Bowen and maybe Cornet on the wings with Ayanava, who could be coming in January. I don't know. But then do you lose the set-piece quality of James Ward-Prowse?
Yeah.
Do you lose the match winner in Souček? What is the right answer?
You know, it's
a real conundrum, I think, in the centre of that midfield.
Yeah, massively, mate. And I think the manager's got to look at dropping one of those players. I mean, it's hard to argue which one at the moment, but that's why he's the manager and we're not. But I think you can't keep having Paqueta on the left. And I'm not just reacting by saying this. I've thought this ever since he's played in that position.
Me too. You know,
and so it's not a one-off that, we played bad, so let's just jump on the bandwagon or something. Mm. I do believe you've got to sort this problem out. It's hard to call which one to drop from the central position. You know, you can even drop Paqueta himself, but I don't think that's the right answer. For me, it probably would be Souček, which is just a ridiculous thing to say because he's scoring the match winning goals, which without him, we would have been no way near where we are in any like sense of achievement. So, because I just don't think he offers anything outside of the goals, which is, again, a ridiculous comment, but I do, that's my issue. So you could bring him on with 20 minutes to go. But then you could argue Ward-Prowse hasn't performed for a while now, so could he be dropped? But something's got to change in that three.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet Plush Care, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yeah, I totally agree. Let's talk about the equaliser, because, I mean, the goal speaks for itself, really, doesn't it? We all know that Mav made a terrible mistake. Why he's made that choice, I don't know, but he has, and it's cost us. What I want to focus on was that it was the 11th goal, I believe, that we conceded in the first 15 minutes of the second half. And I know we touched on this last week, X, but why does this keep happening? Is he not doing something at half-time? Is he giving them the wrong instructions? Is he telling them to conserve their energy at the start of the half to maybe be more explosive towards the end of the game? Is it a case of other clubs have done their analysis and they know that that's a good time to hurt West Ham? I mean, or is it any of the above? Because it's a frustrating stat, that.
Oh, it's a ridiculous stat, mate. You know, if it was like three or four times, you'd say what's going on. But the number of it, I'm not sure how many it is now, but it's going on towards 10, I think. And it's just ridiculous. I don't know what's going on. I do think, you know, if you... Like, I was at the game and I didn't notice it so much. But then when I watched back Match of the Day last night, just to, you know, reaffirm my opinions, when that second goal goes in, the stand where I'm sat, so obviously I can't see it when I'm there, but the stand where I'm sat is like half empty. There's white seats everywhere. Yep. And I'm thinking, you know, maybe as a whole, and you can't blame the supporters for what's going on the pitch, because obviously we don't kick the ball, but as a whole, there's just this whole laid backness to the second half. You know, maybe David Moyes sits there and says, just keep it tight, don't overexert yourself, keep the first 10 minutes calm, and then go for it a bit after that. Maybe he says that, I don't know, but if he is saying that, you think he would have stopped by now, the amount of times it's gone wrong. And also, the fans just casually walking back to their seats, and I hate digging out fans, and I know people get sensitive about it, but casually walking back to their seats, I always make sure, bar the odd exception where the queue for a toilet might be too long, or I might bump into someone I hadn't seen for ages, but majority, 99% of the time, I'm in my seat for the second half to start, because I don't want to be anywhere else. People casually coming back, it gives that whole feeling. And it's, and you know, fans are known as the 12th man, and the reason they're known as the 12th man is because we all know the impact an atmosphere can have on a game. So if you've got people mirandering back to their seats straight after the second half, the players probably have that sort of laid back, you know, and it's just that that combination of things. But also as well, I think Martin made a good point. I do apologise to the listeners. I've come back quite ill from Lapland, so the minus 20 degrees is a bit of a tester. So if I do keep coughing, I do apologise, but I'm putting myself on mute every time I have an attack. But basically, I think Martin Allen made a good point on our podcast with him last week, where he said maybe if it keeps happening, you get West Ham out first. You get them out from the changing room first. You get them to do a little activity on the pitch, you know, a little knocking it around, you know, that one where two in the middle and they pass it around or anything like that. Get them out there a couple of minutes before the opposition, warm them up, get them ready, get them playing bubbles, almost treat it as if it's the start of the first half and see if that makes an impact. But whatever it is that's causing this, it needs to be stopped. So they need to work out a solution to it very soon, because it's ridiculous.
Beat the Batak. Can we bring that back, maybe?
That could be the problem, mate. I think you might have solved it right there. Maybe the intensity of that game and the actual rivalry and the passion and maybe that was what it was. Maybe that's why we're not doing so well.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, maybe that is it. Maybe that is the answer. We should put that forward to the club. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe that's getting a bit of a movement going. But do you know what? I was thinking about this the other day because it's frustrating me so much. Do you remember when there was all that negativity with the Burnley protests around about that time? And us as a podcast, we I don't know if you remember, we tried to push wear your retro shirt day. Yeah, I don't know if you remember. Yeah. And the reason we did that was to show, look, we want to go back to it. So we were still kind of protesting because we were saying we've got to respect our roots, stop being so corporate, get rid of all the sort of all the new modern football that stick to me in West Ham. But it was done in a kind of positive way. That I'm always trying to think of something to get people into their seats at the start of the second half, you know, get people back from the bars and stuff. And, you know, it's people are going to take offence to these comments, but something's got to change at the start of the second half. The players have to be more up for it. And I think the fans need to be back in their seats as well. But I do.
Yeah. They do. It was going to be one of the conversation pieces that I'd noted down, because you're absolutely right. When Palace scored, there was so many empty seats in the stadium. And I do think that can be a contributing factor. And I don't know. Do you know what? It's a difficult one, right? Because I also think the problem in this country is cultural when it comes to home stadiums. Because we're not being funny, X. We go all over the place with West Ham. Yeah. And if we just focus on everywhere we go in this country, it's very rare that we go to a stadium and say, fucking hell, their home support is shit up. Yeah. Unless it is a team that's absolutely thriving, which gives you your answer that the fans are being reactionary to what they're seeing. They're feeding off of the excitement the players are giving them. They're getting that adrenaline from the performance. Whereas if you look across Europe, culturally, they're different. If you look at, you know, Italy, Germany and Turkey, for example, their fans, they're practically all ultras, and their mindset is completely different. They are there to create an atmosphere for 90 minutes to get behind the players and intimidate the opposition. It's just the way they're built. They're different to English fans, because I think traditionally we are more reserved. We're well known for it in this country. And I think that does translate to the terraces if what we're seeing isn't motivating us to generate that support. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I do. And I honestly do believe, going back to the previous point, Sundays at 2 o'clock are not great for generating an atmosphere as well. I do think that is a hindrance because, you know, people will see, you know, depending on your age, but have had all your circumstances, I guess, have had a night out the night before, usually, or have been on the beers or whatever the night before. Sunday is always a bit of when it's cold in winter, you haven't been out with your mates beforehand, perhaps, you know, 2 o'clock on a Sunday, it's a bit dull, you know, and it kind of creates, even when you wake up, well, you know, it was on Sky, I haven't been feeling well, I seriously contemplated just staying at home watching it in the warmth on TV. You know, I did seriously think about that, but I thought, no, that's lame. Let's just get down there. And I did. And I met up with a few people as well, which was good. But, like, I was thinking like that. So I think there's probably others out there. I don't think the 2 o'clock help on Sunday. I don't think, you know... I don't think the start of football helps at all. That, you know, let's be honest, if it was exciting and buzzing, that would change things. But also, other clubs do things slightly differently as well. Like, I don't know, I was watching Nottingham Forest the other day, and when it was half-time for them, 5 minutes or so before the players came out for the second half, they started playing their anthem again. I can't remember what their anthem is now, but whatever their anthem is, they started playing it again really, really loud, getting the fans to sing. I think the PA bloke was doing the sort of starting it off and then sort of pointing to the crowd to sing their parts and stuff, and it actually did create a really good atmosphere for the second half. And, you know, maybe we need to do more like that. We, you know, I can't even remember if we play Bubbles or not now. When they come out, then we certainly used to in the olden days, but, you know, I think something needs to change. But ultimately, what's got to change is, you know, if Moyes wants the crowd, he's got to get them to start performing entertainingly.
Well, speaking of David Moyes, let's hear what the gaffer had to say post-match.
Well, David, how would you assess today's team performance against Crystal Palace?
A little bit mixed. I'm disappointed we didn't maybe take all 3 points, but on the same breath, you know, we're just not quite getting it on Sunday at 2 o'clock here at the stadium. You know, we're finding it really hard to probably build up a good enough atmosphere. Maybe it's we're not playing well enough, or, you know, just within the stadium. But overall, look, we got a goal in front. We scored a really good goal. And I hoped it maybe would take us on to the next phase. We didn't really. But as the game went on, I thought that, you know, we were more liable to score. But overall, look, tight 1-0 games in the Premier League, we had to make sure that we didn't concede. We conceded a woeful goal today. And, no, we move on. That's happens. We've had some good results this week. We've scored late goals recently. Today we came very close to scoring late goals, and maybe if, when you ever look at them again, we'd say that we probably should have scored them.
And you'll always tell us, boss, you know, before games and press conferences, no such thing as an easy game in the Premier League.
Crystal Palace, I think, have come here and won 3 or 4 times against us, so we have to think that maybe getting a point today here is a good result.
Positive, Mo Kudus, 5th goal this season for him for West Ham, and you always say it's hard to settle into life in the Premier League from a foreign league, and he certainly seems to be taking to life at West Ham.
Yeah, I thought he was excellent today, I really did. I thought he was right from the start. He caused Mitchell, who's a good fullback, a lot of problems, and, you know, he was probably our brightest spark and the brightest chance to get us a goal. A really good goal, good move for the goal as well, which I was pleased about. So no, he's settled in well and getting his 5 or 6 goals, and, you know, in the main, a lot of the forward boys, whether it be Tom or Mo, Lucas, Jared, have all been coming up with goals. So long may it continue.
Just finally, boss, that before today it was 4 wins on the bounce. I think that's 1 defeat in 7 for us. So still a good run of form for the team.
Yeah, I think today was a chance for us to sort of knock on the door with the top boys. So I felt as if we could get it. But look, hey, we've all just come back from Serbia in the midweek, and the fans who made the trip there all know exactly what it was like. We don't want to use it as an excuse, but there is a little bit of a reason behind it.
For me, X, that is a car crash of an interview. I mean, firstly, he's alluding to the fans being shit, and whether you agree with him or not, I don't think that's the smartest thing to say on the back of a performance like that. And secondly, I literally cannot believe he said that Palace have won 3 or 4 times against us at the London Stadium, so maybe we have to think that getting a point today was a good result. I mean, is he having a fucking laugh? I couldn't believe he'd said that. Where is the winning mentality in a statement like that? And what message does that send to the players?
Yeah, I mean, taking on the fans, like, in his position when he knows that he divides the fan base is quite a risky move. I mean, he could say what he said, but say it in a sort of a more positive way. Like, he can say the fans have been absolutely brilliant for me since I've been here. They're brilliant fans, best fans in the country. You know, if we can create that atmosphere every week, it'd be, you know, there's subtle ways of doing it. I mean, he could have done that. And yeah, to say that about Palace, I get what he's saying. You know, we've had a Brighton's and another example where, you know, we lose to them most weeks, but this season, most games, sorry, but this season we actually won at Brighton. So I get what you say when you compare the results, you know, to what they were last year. This might be a point game because we always lose to Crystal Palace, but that, like you said, is a real negative attitude. Crystal Palace had a lot of injuries. Crystal Palace are not as good as West Ham, both on the pitch and on paper. So we should be beating Crystal Palace, and it's 2 points lost rather than 1 point gained. And that's what he should be saying. He should be saying, you know, at the end of the day, in the grand scheme of things, it's a point. You know, it's not what I wanted. I wanted 3 points. We should be getting 3 points on that game. In the grand scheme of things, at the end of the season, we'll know how crucial that was. But I wanted 3 points rather than, almost implying at one point, is a good result, because it's not a home to Crystal Palace. You know, if we then go and beat, you know, Manchester City, which we can't because we've already lost to them, but and we beat Liverpool, we beat Arsenal, you can say, well, actually, we substituted it with a draw against Palace, but we probably won't get those results either. So, yeah, I don't know what he's saying there, really.
Well, you've already said that you're feeling strangely positive that we might be able to get something from the game on Thursday. Maybe we will. Hopefully we will against that fucking lot. But we've got another game after that on Sunday at Craven Cottage. Two away games coming up this week. How many points are you expecting from those two games?
Expect ideally it'd be four. I think six, obviously six ideally, but I think realistically four, as in probably a draw at Spurs and a win against Fulham. Realistically, what I think will happen will be probably a point in each. I can see us drawing both games. Both games are tough, don't get me wrong. We all know how good Tottenham are at the moment. I mean, we say at the moment, yes, they got a good result against Man City, but before that, they'd been a bit ropey. They've got injuries, though. This is what David Moyes hasn't admitted, and what I guess we should emphasise as well, is that West Ham, shock horror, apart from the odd bit, and, you know, Antonio being out for a bit and Zuma out for personal reasons, haven't had, touch wood, that many injuries.
No.
You know? And so we can say, yeah, we've had a lot of games in Europe and so on, which we have, but on the flip side, we haven't had many injuries, so he's not had to play players when he's not wanted to, so he's made those selections. So yeah, that's a Tottenham. I think it's a time span. Fulham are very inconsistent. I can't work Fulham out at the moment. You know, you see they get good results and they look terrible. Are they a good team? Have they got good players? Who's a good Fulham player? You know, when I look at Fulham's team, do I go, oh, he's a good player? No, not really. I can't think of many that I think, yeah, he's quality, but they always seem to get results. So it's a tough one to call. I would take a draw in both personally.
Yeah, they are two tough games, to be fair. And they say a point away from home is always a good point. I'm not too sure I'm having that at home on the back of drawing with Crystal Palace, from what Moyes said. But yeah, no. two tough games coming up. Well,
that is one point there. Sorry, mate. That is one point to make. They're like, you know, we are, yes, we should be beating Crystal Palace. And yes, it was a poor performance. And yeah, we've done the negatives. But at the end of the day, West Ham of old, this would be a defeat we're talking about. You know, when we're speaking this negatively, it would be we'd come away with 0 points. We have actually came away with a point. Now, I know that's not ideal, and it's not the three we should have got, but West Ham of old, I think, that would have been a loss we're talking about. So, yeah, that's one thing to consider.
I think, though, at the same time, this is part of people's concerns. It's certainly part of my concern, because one word that I've used a lot under the style of play that David Moyes implements at West Ham is sustainability, because we've got so much quality in that side that we will nick results because we have that much quality. But when you're that predictable and that negative and you're inviting that much pressure on yourself, how sustainable is that style of play? How often can you keep nicking points across the season and stay in cup competitions when you play that way? That's my biggest concern at the moment. And yes, we talk about the West Ham of old versus the West Ham of the here and now. And a lot of people are saying that in terms of quality, the squad of players we've got is the best they've ever seen. Some fans do say that. but we want to take that group of players and move it to the next level. And I just don't feel like David Moyes can do that for West Ham. I think he peaked in Prague. And look, I will say this, unless we're out of every cup competition and we're seriously struggling in the Premier League, I don't think I would sack him. I think if he can float around mid-table and the players remain happy, assuming that they are, I don't know if they are, but remain happy, because that is very important as well. You know, we don't want it to get under Moyes' ball that Kudus is on the phone to his agent saying, I'm desperate to get out of here in the summer. You know, so there are mitigating circumstances, but generally speaking, unless we're banging trouble, I would keep David Moyes and suffer the shit football reluctantly in the hope that in the summer, that will be the time to attract a top level manager to come in. No, go on, mate.
I agree with you, mate. I agree. Like, I'm not sitting here, despite the fact everyone tags me in as if I'm Moyes' like brother or something. Like, I'm not sitting here acting like we don't look at all alike as well. So hopefully, if people see me, they'll realise that we are very different looking. So there's no way we are brothers. I'm not sitting here like defending David Moyes to the hill. Like, I defend him more than most because I go with the facts, and the facts are we are sitting for 5 points on Champions League spot in the quarterfinals of the Carabao Cup, hopefully finishing top of our European group. So when you look at the facts and take out the style of football, the entertainment value, all the things you said there, then the facts are we are achieving something still. You cannot sack David Moyes at the moment on what he's achieving, because he is achieving. Yes, it's not pretty how he's getting there, and yes, it's very negative at times, and maybe we should be doing better with the players we've got, but you can't guarantee that that will happen if you change the manager. So for me, West Ham fans have just got to lump it, because he's going to be the manager till the end of the season unless something drastic happens, and that's probably not going to happen. So all this constant moaning about it and negativity and it, like, doing a different show every single day saying the same thing about Moyes, there's some accounts do, that it doesn't achieve anything. He's still going to be the manager. It just breeds negativity. For me, whether you like it or not, he's going to be here end of the season. You need to then evaluate at the end of the season, can we get a top manager in? If so, then let's go for it. Can we what's Moyes actually done? Has he won something? And what has he matched those achievements? If he has, then do you speak to him and say, look, you're achieving, but we want you to try to keep those achievements, but change your style of football, or do you get rid of him? They're the dilemmas you have, but you have that dilemma because it's going to be what happens anyway at the end of the season. I don't believe you can get a top manager. There'll be some out there, of course, and there'll be some that break the rule, but I think the majority of top managers, if they're doing well, you know, if there's a manager that's not doing well and wants to get out of their situation, you might be able to get them. But look at Tottenham with Postelugu. They didn't appoint him during the season because, as I said on the podcast at the time, he won't leave Celtic until the end of the season. So Tottenham did interim managers, yeah, until they got to the end of the season where they then appointed the manager they wanted. Chelsea did the same thing. You know, they got Frank Lampard back, of all people that had already previously failed there, and then that, because they knew that Pochettino. They knew that he wouldn't take the job mid-season. He'd only take it at the end of the season when he could wipe the staff clean, have a summer to get his players in. So they waited, put Frank Lampard in charge, were terrible, and then they got the manager they wanted. This is what West Ham will have to do, and then at the end of the season we can see who those top managers are, because, you know, people were talking about top managers at the start of the season that no longer look like top managers because they're not doing as well. Would people take Vincent Kompany now? I don't know. Some might do, some might not, but it's at the end of the season you've got to judge, for me. And I just think this constant Moyes thing is like taking over. Well, you're either a Moyes in or you're a Moyes out, rather than a West Ham supporter at the moment, and it needs to stop, in my opinion.
Yeah, I know what you mean. The division is very us and them that's been created with this, and it's almost like point scoring on a weekly basis, which is quite annoying.
It's awful. I've seen other accounts call people fucking, I can't even think of the words now, but like, dung beetles and slugs and rats and stuff because they think one side and not the other. Why can't you just have an opinion on the manager but all be West Ham supporters? It's just ludicrous. Why do we have to have this divide? I'm telling you, other fans look at West Ham fans acting like this, bearing in mind they don't know the style of football and the negatives that we have towards boys. They just see the black and white. West Ham got their first trophy last year in 42 years. West Ham are in ninth place and near Champions League. They see those facts. They don't see what we see. And then they see our fan base attacking each other. Boys in, boys out. Oh, you're this because you for this. How can you fucking think that? Blah, blah, blah. It's just not West Ham United. As soon as we're united again, we're more powerful and more strong. And I just think there's no point getting so worked up about something that isn't going to change. Seriously, like, what is the point of doing that? It's like trying to argue that you don't want tomorrow to be Tuesday. It's going to be Tuesday, so you can't do anything about it until the end of the season. And you can say the fans, you know, all get together if we hit them where it hurts, we don't go to the games and stuff. First of all, that would be an overreaction, I think. And second of all, it wouldn't work because I don't think that would, the gate receipts would make that much difference. In the grand scheme of things, you get a lot more money for other things. So there is no way, unless it's a terrible, terrible run of results, Moyes will be here to the end of the season, unless he walks himself. So let's just see what happens.
Well, Lex, I have been seriously scratching around for some positives this week, but it has been a challenge. One that we can talk about isn't necessarily the performance against Bacca Topola, but the result, as it's a win that secures knockout football in that competition, which is exciting.
Yes, and mate, I'm telling you, right, isn't it? When it comes to those games, of course, you know, I'd say how boring it was and what was I doing and watching that game, but for me, in those games, not necessarily the Premier League, but in those games, away in Serbia against a smaller team, it is all about just getting a result. I couldn't care less if we won 1-0 for a Suchek last-minute header, or we won 8-0, just got to go there and get a result and finish this group with a rotated squad. You know, he's making 7-8 changes per game with a rotated squad. Get top of this group. Now, all we need to do is draw or win against the German team Freiburg next week, and then we've done that and we skip the playoff round. We don't have to rotate so much because we've bypassed two games and we've finished top of the group, which again helps your UEFA rankings. I mean, another thing to consider, because we've done so well in Europe for the last 2-3 years, the only team that have got the identical record to West Ham in Europe is Real Madrid. We've got a better record than every other team. And the bottom line is, if you get a good record in Europe, you then get your, I think it's called UEFA coefficiency or something, that improves. So then you get invited to join the World Club Cup in the summer, something that West Ham could never have bloody dreamed of playing in, you know, in Mexico and Brazil and all those countries that also enter it. And, you know, so to finish top of the group, The performance against a weak team was terrible. Let's be honest. It was a terrible performance, but we won the game. Now, if we don't lose against the German side, then that's fine. I literally don't care how we play in Europe. I just want us to win the trophy because I'll get European away days, which are exciting in itself, probably more exciting than the actual football. So I'll still get those, and I'll see West Ham's reputation in Europe improve. I'll see West Ham go and get hopefully better players on the back of it. And so the results are all that counts for me in Europe. And yes, I want more style of football in the league, but in Europe, those are the results. We won 1-0. We're top of the group. Get a draw. Job done.
Yeah, no, I make you right, mate. I make you right. Okay, it's that time again.
Calling all West Ham fans. Are you a patron of the West Ham Way? If not, why not? For the price of a pint, you get top quality content on a daily basis, to include the famous West Ham Way podcast with Dave and X, over 100 interviews with ex-players and celebrity fans, Mad Dog Bites with Martin Allen, a show with Tony Cotty, the U Irons podcast, the West Ham Way USA, a transfer window show with Demis Sheff, and expert pre-match analysis. There are virtual events with ex-players, written articles, match day discussion, away day burger reviews, in-depth match reports, and If you want to be the first to get reliable, accurate, exclusive news on all club affairs, you'll get exactly that from the best ITK in the business, ex-West Ham United employee. All that and more delivered to your phone for a fiver a month. It's the daddy.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.